At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Herschel York, pastor of Buck Run Baptist Church in Frankfort, Kentucky, and also Dean of Theology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Dr. York, thanks again for joining me on The Commonwealth Matters.
Well, it's always a joy to be with you. Thank you.
The Kentucky General Assembly is in session. This means that this year they're considering bills, policies that affect Kentuckians across the Commonwealth. And many of these issues particularly touch on moral values. They intersect with biblical values. And I'd like to roll out some of these issues. And it seems, by the way, that as time goes on, the issues that we're addressing in the General Assembly are becoming more extreme. There's issues now, Dr. York, that we're dealing with that even 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think we ever would have imagined dealing with. So, for example, the Save Women's Sports Act, which is a bill that's been proposed in the State House and in the State Senate, it's moving. This is a bill that would keep transgender boys or boys who identify as girls off of girls' sports teams. A few years ago, this was really not an issue. Transgenderism was something that was on the margins of society, something that really wasn't thought much about. But today, it is an issue. There are those who say, look, it's a right for an individual to determine their own gender identity. This is something, because we're tolerant and because we should care about people, we should just accept boys who identify as girls who want to play on the girls' sports team. So didn't see this coming a few years ago, but it's here. And here's what I'd like us to unpack, if we could. How do we think about this moment that we're in, and then this issue in particular? How do we even get our bearings? Because it's pretty clear to me that you are a man and a male.
Yes, that's right. I think it's important that Christians maintain two things. One is that we maintain an absolute commitment to what the Scripture says. So the Bible was not wrong. It was not unenlightened. It does not need correction. Here's the reality. Either you are going to submit yourself to what the Scripture says, or you are going to demand that the Scripture submit to what you think. The text is either over you or you're over the text. But I don't think it's even consistent to call yourself a Bible-believing Christian and then for you to decide which parts of the Bible you trust and which you don't. And in the very first three chapters of Genesis, you really have a clear teaching that God created male and female. In the beginning, he created them, male and female. Jesus affirms this in Matthew 19. When they ask him about divorce, he says, well, from the beginning, it was not so. In the beginning, he created them male and female. Now, if you're comfortable sitting in judgment on the book of Genesis and on the words of Jesus, you're braver than I am, because I am not prepared to stand before the Lord and say, hey, you got this wrong. So the Bible clearly teaches that we are male and female. Gender is binary. By the way, these people who say follow the science on everything else, they're not saying that about this, because the science on this is clear. There's an X chromosome, there's a Y chromosome. We perpetuate and propagate the race by the usual means that requires male and female. So I think our first assumption is that we should have an absolute commitment to the truth of Scripture. I also think we should be compassionate to people who, there is no part of me that feels somehow morally superior or arrogant towards someone who struggles with their own sexuality. Man, my heart breaks. I've got to believe that about the most miserable condition to be in is to not be happy with how God made you. And so my heart breaks for people who don't feel that. And I'm not out to wound them, hurt them in any way. But I know that in any other thing like that, I'm not making light of this, but I'm going to use an extreme example, okay? If a man comes to me and he truly believes he's a cat, I don't think the thing that helps him is for me to indulge that belief, right? I say, oh, man, I should have compassion for this guy. He believes something that's not true. How can I help him see the truth of who he is and enjoy who he is and have a full, fulfilling life as who he is? So I'm compassionate towards people who are transgender, and there are certain physical conditions. People, it used to be called hermaphrodites, now intersex, but there are physical things that come into play. Christians should be so compassionate about that. But you can't ask the entire culture to shift their bedrock belief and even their self-conceptualization, because there is a very, very small percentage of the population that thinks this way.
It is, but the cultural flow is that people should be able to define their own existence, their own meaning. In fact, there was a famous U.S. Supreme Court ruling. It was the Casey decision back in 1994, and it was Anthony Kennedy who said the meaning of liberty essentially is to define their own existence. That's a bit of a paraphrase. But that is really where the culture is today. And if you don't agree with somebody's ability to define their own existence, the meaning, the purpose in life, then there's something wrong with you. But of course, we're approaching this from a different worldview.
Yeah, but that's right. We are approaching from a different worldview. But I would say even in their worldview, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We've seen, like, is it right for a white person to say my self concept is that I'm actually African American? Now, I know we've seen it. There's been history, and I will just say it doesn't work. How African American people who have come up with huge disadvantages and challenges, and so, I mean, someone who's just calling themselves an African American, though they have, there's no genetic basis for that, they've not faced the same things. They don't have the same life experience. They don't share the same DNA. I mean, to me, it undermines the real issues that people that with that challenge face. And by the way, back to the transgender issue itself, I mean, even like Bruce and now Caitlyn Jenner, who was at one time the world's greatest athlete, Jenner does not believe that biological males should be able to compete in a women's sport. Martina Navratilova, who's a lesbian, doesn't believe that. Now, they've been canceled by a lot of people because they spoke up and said what just ought to be a sense of fair play. I mean, we're watching this this swimmer demolishing all opponents because that's a biological male playing in a women's sport, and their bodies are different. I mean, they just are. And it's just not fair. I mean, I just think about the people that have to compete with that person, how disheartening that must be. And they don't have a sense of fair play. No one that loses to that person can say, oh, I feel good about losing because this helps the cause. Well, why compete at all? Why don't, you know? So I think we need to be compassionate. But I mean, to me, there's just a sense of fair play here that we wouldn't let an able-bodied person compete in the Paralympics because they have some self-conceptualization that they're really, truly handicapped.
So Christians who are concerned about this, we've seen a few. You mentioned Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner, Maria Navratilova speak against it. They've been canceled. What about Christians? Should we be afraid of being canceled, I guess? Should we speak out first of all, and then should we fear being canceled if we do?
Let me put it this way. I know we shouldn't be afraid of being canceled, but I think we should fear being genuinely unkind. I think we need to make sure that we're always appealing to scripture and just really the natural law, but never coming across as smart aleck, smarmy, putting people down. And I think sometimes we rant rather than argue. I'm happy to put Christian ideas out there in the marketplace of ideas and take whatever comes, but I don't want to be seen. I work hard not to be seen as someone who is spiteful, hateful, arrogant, and smart aleck. That doesn't help the cause at all.
It's easy to do, to become self-righteous. If you're doing all the right, and this is my observation, if you're doing all the right things and doing the things you believe honor God, and then you see something radically wrong, it's easy to point that out. It's easy to get frustrated over that. Your point about being gracious and compassionate, this is what Jesus did to those who are marginalized in his society. And I think this perhaps, Dr. York, is where the church needs to land on this issue and other issues, is to land on grace, land on compassion, land on lending their hand, sitting down and listening to somebody who's struggling with their sexuality or what it might be. And we're not talking about compromising biblical convictions at all.
No, in fact, I talk to people who struggle with same-sex attraction and or even sometimes feel like they are in the wrong body. I've spoken to Christians who have these feelings. And one of the things that sort of shocks them when I tell them this, I go, you're not special. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, first of all, are your struggles harder than... I used to have a woman in my church that had been raped by her father from the time she was 8 till she left home at 16, virtually every day of her life. And now, is your struggle harder than hers? I mean, to think that somehow your struggle, your pain is greater than anyone else's is to have a self-centered look. The reality is so many people are struggling with so many things, and Christians should show compassion to all of these. But the answer, we apply the gospel. What does the gospel say? How does the gospel help you with your hurts, your brokenness? Because the gospel is the way that God is getting us back to ultimately the perfect world he created and that was in Eden. And Jesus is going to restore all this. And so we need to embrace what is God's design, because we're going back to God's design. And in the meantime, the gospel helps us work toward God's design as we follow Christ and restoring that in our brokenness. And Christians need to see the gospel as that restorative power in our lives.
Now that's good. So another issue related to transgenderism, there's a bill in the legislature called the SAFE Act. It stands for Save Adolescents from Experimentation, and it would prevent minors from undergoing hormone therapy or what they call sex reassignment surgery. And this bill is being harshly criticized as taking away the rights of minors from, again, determining their own identity and from aligning with what they believe they are. How do we as Christians respond?
I think any decision that makes a minor, sort of sentences them to a particular condition for the rest of their lives, is ill-advised, any kind of voluntary procedure. And again, there are on YouTube, there are videos of people who had gender reassignment surgery. We used to just call it sex change operation as a child, and then grew up, and they're angry that their parents ever let them do it because now they've mutilated themselves. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in childhood and adolescence. I mean, my granddaughter one day thought she was a cat, and that's why that illustration came to mind. I mean, she'll go around pretending like she's a cat, and we there's none of us that say, oh, well, we need to let her think she's a cat, and we need to somehow arrange her life permanently. You know, we're going to turn her room into, you know, a litter box. I mean, you know, we don't do that. I mean, I don't mean to make light of this, but, you know, a third grader might, they can't decide what their favorite toy is, let alone make a decision for the rest of their lives. And I saw a woman on the internet putting up a video about her 5-year-old, and they were going to get a gender reassignment surgery for their 5-year-old. I'm going, you know, a 5-year-old still eats his boogers. I mean, you know, I mean, that's just, that makes no sense. And if it were reversed, let me throw out a possibility. Let's say that there were a true gay gene. And if people that don't believe in homosexuality could do some kind of genetic procedure that would keep their child from being gay, the very same people that are now defending this this kind of surgery for a child would be up in arms about that. And I just say, we need to be consistent that it's not good to be doing anything to children that's going to put them in a particular box for the rest of their lives when you don't know what they're feeling is permanent. And I think it's, I honestly think that that is nothing short of child mutilation. It's a dangerous thing to do to a child.
Would it be going too far to say that as Christians, we have an obligation to intercede for those who cannot speak for themselves, to advocate for those who really aren't of sound mind? They cannot make that decision for themselves rightfully.
Yeah, I think it's proper to pass laws that say we cannot alter the sex of minors because you're making a decision that that child's going to be bound with the rest of their lives, and you don't know what at 21 that child will think of that. You just can't. We don't let children let them drink alcohol. We don't think that their bodies are ready for that. We don't think their emotions are ready for it. Their intellect is ready for that. And that would be just, for some, have an effect for an evening. Gender reassignment is for life. Why would we do that? It just makes no sense. And yes, I think that is a righteous law to protect those children from really bad decisions they're going to have to live with the rest of their lives.
That's good. If you're just joining us, I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Hershey York, and we're talking about some issues in the Kentucky General Assembly. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with Dr. Hershey York, and we are talking about the 2022 Kentucky General Assembly. And Dr. York, a bill that has been proposed by a state legislator from Bowling Green is a bill to ban what is called conversion therapy. Now, that's a derogatory term towards a counselor or a family therapist who might want to counsel a young person to leave their LGBT identity and to embrace their heterosexual identity or a heterosexual identity. This bill is not expected to move in Kentucky this session because of the makeup of the legislature. However, it is out there. It will likely come up again. Many other states have passed bills like this. This is a bill that does affect where pastors are on this issue, the ability of pastors to counsel minors regarding their sexuality.
Well, nothing exposes the hypocrisy of the left quite like this bill, because these are the people who for years in the abortion discussion have been saying, the government should have nothing to do with the discussion between a woman and her doctor. We shouldn't enter into that whatsoever. That is sacrosanct. But now, if the counselor, they're trying to get in the counseling room between the counselor and the patient, the counselee, and that they shouldn't go there. For one thing, there are a lot of people, I mean, as a pastor, I've had a lot of people come to me who experience same-sex attraction, and they come in the door saying, please help me deal with this in a godly way. I want to follow the Scripture, and I want to honor Christ. Now, my goal is not to turn them into someone who has heterosexual desires. My goal is to help them follow Christ, whether it be through celibacy, though I will tell you, I have seen people who had same-sex attraction and later married, and I know one young lady that my wife counseled years ago who's been married now 30 years and has had a marvelous marriage and children, and she asked, help me get out of this desire and this lifestyle. Is the law going to tell a counselor you may not do that? Well, the government has no business going into that counseling room, and especially in a pastoral setting. And any law that even smacks of that is wrong on its face, and I think we should oppose it.
The way the language of this particular bill would restrict pastoral fee-based counseling. And I don't think you're a fee-based counselor, but you're one step away. You're a pastor, and you're offering counseling. You're one step away from that happening.
But I am a great believer in the biblical counseling movement, and there are biblical counselors. And we actually have here at Buck Run a counseling couple that are trained, and one day a week they come here, and they do see people on a fee-based basis, and they offer biblical guidance. I mean, this is what they do for a living. They help local churches with that. Where pastors are sort of overloaded, they come in and they do biblical counseling because they resonate with what we believe. So a lot of churches do that, and that's absolutely proper. And even though they're not pastors on our staff, we do trust their counsel. They trained at the institution where I happen to be the dean of the School of Theology, so I have every confidence in their training and their ability to counsel. And again, General Assembly has no business going into that. That is based on our religious faith, and they have no right to tell us what we can and cannot counsel.
This is a good springboard to the next issue. And during the COVID pandemic shutdown, Governor Beshear determined certain entities as essential and other entities as non-essential. Churches were considered non-essential during that period.
The Red Mile Casino, and let's call it what it is, in Lexington, was able to stay open from 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock the next morning, every day.
Bit of a contradiction. So I guess casinos and being able to go to the casino was considered a necessity, while going to Buck Run Baptist or any other church across the Commonwealth was not. Now, that created a backlash during that time. But now, in the General Assembly, there's a bill introduced by Shane Baker, a state rep from Somerset, that would say that the church is an essential entity, and the government has no authority to shut down churches at any point. This bill has many, many co-sponsors. I want to say it's close to 50 co-sponsors. It is moving through. I'm not sure if it'll pass both chambers, but this is an issue where our freedom as Christians to worship and to gather and to not be told by the government when to open and when to close. This brings into focus, Dr. York, the necessity for us to engage, to be aware of what's going on, but then to engage.
That's right. We want to be good citizens. Honestly, none of us had faced a global pandemic before, and Buck Run, I don't say gladly, but we shut down. In fact, I was called by a reporter. I'll never forget March the 10th, 2020. I was called by a reporter and said, "Are you going to have services Sunday?" I said, "Of course we're going to have services Sunday. Why are you even asking?" She said, "Well, the governor has asked churches to not have them." And my answer was, "When they shut down the boys' Sweet 16 and NCAA tournament, you call me. But as long as they're going to do it, we're going to have church." 2 days later, I made a video saying we're not having church. None of us knew what we were facing, and none of us wanted to be the cause of a lot of people dying. But as the thing progressed and we began to see what the real threat level was, what was being allowed to take place, what was categorized as essential and non-essential. And then I'm just going to throw it out there. When the governor sent state troopers to church parking lots on Easter Sunday in 2020, okay, you've crossed the line. That was, first of all, so ill-advised. I cannot believe that a governor in the Commonwealth did that. It still just absolutely infuriates me because, again, the Red Mile can have people come in there and sit at their slot machines, which were illegal to begin with, and they could do that, but churches are threatened. Okay, that's just beyond the pale.
By the way, of course, you and I testified in front of a legislative committee about what happened during that shutdown, the contradictions and what happened with some of the churches and how they were treated, and I appreciate your willingness to testify. Dr. York, we have just a couple more minutes. There's one more issue I'd like us to unpack, and this is a bill called the Humanity in Healthcare Act. It's an omnibus pro-life bill that would make it more difficult for minors to get an abortion. It also addresses humane disposal of fetal remains from an abortion center. And then it would regulate and restrict chemical abortions through the mail. Right now, the FDA has made a decision to allow women to obtain abortion-ending drugs through the mail. Very easy and ready, very easy to get. Speak to this issue, I guess, broadly, the life issue. Why should we care about the sanctity of life?
Every human being is created in the image of God. Every child is an image bearer of the Creator, and the cheapening of life that results when we just allow any human life to be ended by a means that you can obtain through the mail. I mean, it's assassination by catalog order. It's just, it is reprehensible, and it just cheapens all human life. And we've got to hold the line on all pro-life issues, because that only advances one direction. Next, it will be the ending of elderly people. I mean, you can make an argument about quality of life for a lot of people, and that's where that goes. And so I'm for any pro-life bill that says abortion is wrong. Every human life is sacred from conception to the grave.
And that sounds radical to people who don't come at this from the same worldview that you and I have. But, you know, the truth is, you mentioned the science earlier. We should look at the science. And the science says that human life begins as an embryo, a one-celled human embryo. And so you were an embryo at one time, I was an embryo at one time, and you and I are looking to defend our fellow human embryos, because life is a continuum. It has a continuum, it has a beginning, and it has an end. And when you're talking about life in the womb, you're just talking about a life that needs to grow and to develop.
If we found a fertilized egg cell on Mars, what would they say they found?
Oh boy, that'd be huge news.
We found life on Mars. So let's just call it what it is.
And as people of life, we serve the author of life. We have been redeemed with a new life. There's a gospel opportunity, isn't there?
Absolutely. And there's such hope. You know, this is the thing. We've got to step up when women have an unwanted pregnancy. We need to be there to support them, help them, love them. And by the way, I've said this before on Twitter and just gotten killed for it. I can place any baby. I know Christians that will take it. And there are so many families willing to adopt babies